Now, I'm beyond delighted to be speaking to a guy who, well, first came to my attention through WCW NWO World Tour on the N64. I've been obsessed with pro wrestling ever since. Diamond Dallas Page, how are you?
Great, man. Great. Everything's post-WWE Hall of Fame tour. It's going great.
Well,
everything's been great.
Well, I want to talk about that. A legend in the industry. You've been inducted into the Hall of Fame this year. Has it sunk in yet?
Yeah. I had plenty of months before it went in, and it was an amazing tribute, you know, that I could, you know, all the hard work. You know, people said I'd never make it in wrestling starting at 35. You know, 35 years old. That's when my career, when I started it as a manager. I mean, as a wrestler, I came in as a manager at 31 years old. But everybody laughed at me when I started. And then no one ever thought I could get to be a mid-card guy. And it took 4.5, almost 5 years. But in that 5 years, I became a main eventer. And in 8 years, I became a world champion. So, you know, the next thing that you hope when you're all said and done, of course, is the Hall of Fame. And, you know, I didn't have any kind of a run in the WWE, but the WWE really is the WWF, the WCW, the AWA, Georgia Championship Wrestling, Florida Championship Wrestling. It's everything. You know, the WWE is wrestling. And so it just made sense that at some point they would put me in, and I was happy that they did it. But, you know, once Sting went in, and finally Macho and Jake went in, and Michael P.S. Hayes, you know, to be in that group of guys, if you really look at the only Hall of Famers, Ric Flair is really every federation. You know, Ric Flair is arguably, you know, the best, really is the best of all time. You know, as far as you're going to look at, you know, how long he wrestled, what he did, his accomplishments, his interviewing, his ring work. I mean, A to Z, you know, nature. You know, Shawn Michaels is the only guy that I would even put, like, right next to him, you know, as far as the longevity and everything that he had. So, you know, Nietzsche really, you don't say he's a WCW guy, but he's a WCW guy. You know, the Four Horsemen were definitely WCW. So them being the first in there, I thought was really cool. And then, you know, to follow it up with, you know, Booker, who was still WCW, you know, WWE, and he had a hell of a run up there, and he worked his ass off for it. And, you know, then Stinger, you know, Michael P.S. Hayes, Ron Simmons, you know, so I'm like in a very elite group of guys who came out of WCW that's, you know, not over seven guys, you know, from our, because you can't really count Nash and Hall because they were more, they really got their big push initially from WWF, you know, so it was just great to be there. It's great to be a part of it. As Ricky Steamboat said to me, it's a part of a very exclusive club.
And you know? And you mentioned Ric Flair there. I mean, when you won one of your World Heavyweight Championships, that was in, it was in a four-way, wasn't it, with Ric Flair as well?
Yes, it was. And, you know, the, you know, I said it, Rick and I had a lot of heat with each other throughout our careers. And it was never really out there vocally between the two of us, but it was, you know, behind the scenes. And he said some stuff, I said some stuff. And, you know, bottom line is I didn't want to go through the rest of my life feeling like that about Ric Flair, because I love Ric Flair and didn't want to have the heat with him. And, you know, I ran into him at a signing, and I literally pulled him over and said, you know, Nate, I know there's been heat with us throughout the years. And he's going, oh, Diamond, don't worry about that. I go, Rick, I'm not worried about it. I want to fix it. You know, like, I don't want to feel like this about you. I don't want you to feel this way about me. I said, I don't know what happened. I said, but I'd love to start all over, bro. And I put my hand out and said, I'm Diamond Dallas Page. And he just gave me a big old hug. And ever since then, me and him have been really good. And I always wanted to thank him for putting me over. But it couldn't just be like, hey, Rick, I just want you to know, man, it really meant a lot to me that, you know, that you're the guy that I got the world title from. I wanted to do it like how I did it, which was at the Hall of Fame. and it definitely meant a lot to Rick. You know, it means a lot to all the boys when someone is thankful because they know that they're a part of you being over. Like, without Randy Savage, you know, there is no Hall of Fame. Without Jake Roberts, without Dusty Rhodes, without Kevin Nash and Scott Hall. You know, so I thought it was really important to thank all the people that I wanted to thank. And Nate, you know, I don't know if he would, I don't think he saw that coming. And that's really what I wanted too. I wanted him to know that I was grateful for him giving me, you know, putting me one step closer to that podium. And in return, when we were leaving, night before everybody was heading home, we were sitting at the bar, and me and Nate, and he says, oh, what time are you leaving tomorrow morning? I said, 7:30. He was like, whoa, who booked that? And I go, I didn't. He goes, screw that. You and Brenda, who's my wife, he's like, you're coming with me. He goes, I got, you still live in Atlanta? I said, yeah. He goes, I got a Learjet. I'm flying you and Brenda home. I'm like, dude, I got all this baggage. He goes, have it sent FedEx. He goes, you're coming with me. And so limousine riding, Learjet flying, you know, shoot. I mean, what a way to go out at the end and, you know, to have that, you know, brotherhood with Flair. It felt really great. And then he took me out for my birthday. It was my birthday. He wouldn't let me go home. No, we're going to eat first. And then he sent me and Brenda home in a freaking limousine. I mean, it was like, what a way to end your career, you know?
And because yours is a unique story in wrestling, I mean, we go back to the beginning because you were born in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. What were you like as a child?
Super hyperactive. you know, my mother said when I was a little 2-year-old, I would ride that, you know, 3-year-old, I would ride that tricycle in circles for hours. You know, had a lot of energy. If you think I got a lot of energy at 61? Just see me at 5, 8, 10, 12. I was an athlete. You know, I played football and hockey, you know, American football. And then I got hit by a car. It hit me in my I walked out in front of it. It hit my right knee. My face bounced off the hood. And I flew 42 feet from the point of impact. And it was brutal. They literally said my playing football and hockey was over. So I went to see a top doctor in the country who was in New York. My mom took me, and he basically said, you're never going to be Willis Reed, who was a world champion basketball player. You're never going to be Joe Namath, who was a world champion football player. These guys were both guys he'd worked on their knees. And he basically told me I was never going to be those guys. Yeah, I guess he didn't know I was going to be a Diamond Dallas Page, you know. And it really got under my skin that someone, I think that's the first time someone told me that I couldn't. And that was the first time it really stuck out to me when someone was telling me what I would never be. It was the beginning of the drive.
Had the wrestling bug bitten by then? Were you into wrestling at that time?
And from 8 till 12, I was into it big time. Then when I got into sports, I kind of got out of it. But then I came back to it when I was like 17, 18. And I loved Handsome Jimmy Valiant. I'll never forget the first time I saw Superstar Billy Graham and Dusty Rhodes. You know, and they were old. They were young still. They were like 25-ish, you know, maybe 27. You know, and Dusty was about 10 years older than me. And I'll never forget seeing them guys. I'm like, wow. Like, these guys. I mean, these guys are, they're the show, man. You know, like, these guys are amazing. And, you know, I wanted to be one of them, you know. And I wasn't bigger than life personality just my whole life. I've always had beautiful women. I used to ask my grandmother, who raised me from 8 years old. You know, I say, Graham, how come I always get all the beautiful girls? She said, you have a golden tongue. You have the gift of gab.
And I suppose
And I had a confidence.
And I suppose that's where you went into nightclub owning and promoting, didn't you, straight out of college?
Yeah. Well, I loved it. I loved the nightclub business. And I tried to wrestle when I was 22. I tried to, you know, give it a shot. And went for it. But, you know, I hurt my knee, the same knee that I freaking got hit by a car with. And I was only 22. And I got my first opportunity to literally run a rock and roll bar. It was small, but it was, you know, I've had bands on the weekends and had a restaurant upstairs. And I got my first opportunity at 22 to run the place at nighttime. And it was all about the booze and the broads and the party. You know, back then, you know, I was Diamond Dallas Page. You know, I had so much fun. And I kind of got away from wrestling again, like I did when I started playing sports. But I saw it blow up in the mid-80s, and I got so mad I stopped watching because I knew that I should have been a part of that. And then I got pulled in by catching Jesse Ventura when he was doing color commentating. I got pulled back in, and then the next person that Jesse was introducing was a guy who walked through the curtain who looked as tough as nails, big Fu Manchu, long hair, and he had a bag over his shoulder. And I'd never seen him before. And it was Jake Snake Roberts. And when I watched his work in the ring and his promo ability, he was mesmerizing, you know. And I thought, man, like, this guy's real. Like, the other guys, you know, some guys, you know, their matches were good, but this guy's, like, for real. You know, like, that was, like, the sense I got from Jake. And next thing you know, I was pulled back in. And years later, I would, you know, actually be running a nightclub in Fort Myers, Florida, and Jake came in. Like, Jake rolled in. And, you know, just 1,200 people in the club. And I just happened to be watching my monitor in my office and see where people were walking in. And this guy walks in, looks like Jake Snake Roberts. I'm like, oh, my God. And next thing you know, I'm out at the bar and I walk up and I'm like, hey, you Jake Roberts? He goes, who wants to know? And I'm like, the guy who runs this place. He says, yeah, I am. I said, okay, what are we drinking? And that's how I met Jake Roberts, having cocktails. You know, and then this guy would go on to be, you know, many years later, my mentor. You know, it just, God puts us on certain tracks, you know, and, you know, it's pretty amazing. You know, if you're paying attention to all the signs, it's pretty amazing what happens in your life. A lot of people think, oh, God, well, I can't do that, you know, and the bottom line is, when you say you can and you say you can't, you're right. Henry Ford said that, you know, but what the hell did he ever do, right? You know, the bottom line is, it was the, you know, that whole meeting up with Jake Snake was just unbelievable. And then he'd come in and different guys would come in, like Ted DiBiase and the Bushwhackers and like all these different cats would find their way to this place called Norma Jean's Dance Club, because it was right in the middle of Tampa, Florida and Miami, Florida. And normally they'd wrestle Tampa and then they'd wrestle Miami. Well, it was a 287-mile road trip. So the natural stop was in Fort Myers. And they knew a guy who was paying for their drinks. So, you know, it became a destination of the boys. And, that's how all that came together.
Now, you ended up sending a tape to the AWA, didn't you? What was on that tape that you sent them?
The tape was literally me and three guys who are friends of mine who wanted to be wrestlers. And none of them had any ability. They just wanted to be wrestlers. And I wanted to be a wrestling manager, because by that time I was 31 and I thought I was too old to wrestle. And so I made this videotape of, you know, this guy named Rock Hard Rick and this other guy, Big Bad John. And then I had a midget and I called him Ted E. Bear. And I made up these promos and talking about the guys. And you know, I had the Diamond Dolls, first time ever. You know, before there were divas, before these beautiful women were everywhere in professional wrestling, they were the Diamond Dolls. And there was many of them. Many of them were, you know, they're all stripper hot because most of them were strippers. And bottom line is, you know, I said it to them and they called me up and said, we want to bring you and your boys in for a tryout. You know, the only question we have for you, we showed your tape around and we kind of like your shtick, but where are you guys working? No one's ever heard of you before. And then I got to tell Rob Russin, the guy who called me, well, we have one problem, Rob, none of those guys can wrestle. And they were like, what? You know, I was like, you know, they want to. Everybody wants to. It's like a secret society. No one can figure out how to get in. So, long story short, you know, we'll call you. Don't call us, we'll call you. And luckily for me, Paulie Dangerously, now today known as Paul Heyman, he left the AWA. He was their young guy who had an incredible gift of gab. And he left and went to the NWA, which would later become WCW. And it left a huge void for a young guy to can talk. And that's how I got in. I mean, it was like, again, God lining up the stars for me. You know, it was like lining up the planets. It was, you know, my whole career, it's really been crazy. It's been an unbelievable, crazy ride, you know, all the way up to the end, you know, getting taken home by Ric Flair in his Learjet, you know.
Now, so, this was about the time you met the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, didn't you? And he had a massive impact on your career.
Oh, massive. Yeah, I always say without Dusty, there is no Diamond Dallas Page. You know, there really isn't. He's the guy who brought me into Florida Championship Wrestling because the AWA got me some cred. It got me some notice, but it's not what put me, you know, it's not what put me on the map. You know, WCW finally put me on the map, but it took doing Florida Championship Wrestling with Dusty Rhodes, Mike Graham, Gordon Solie, Steve Kern. I mean, these guys, they were trying to pop Florida. And Dusty could have sold out. Dusty could have brought 5,000 people to an autograph signing when he was the man in Florida. But, you know, like anything, it only lasts so long. And you know you got to really jump on that ride, that roller coaster. You know, when it's hot, and the dream will always be Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream. But he, you know, when it came right down to timing, the Florida Championship Wrestling, that never worked. So, bottom line is, you know, he went back to WWE. And did the polka dotted gimmick. And that was all a rip on Dusty. And, you know, bottom line is he got it over. And then eventually he came back to WCW, and that's where he brought me in. And, you know, if he doesn't bring me in, you know, I have no career.
So it was Dusty who encouraged you to get involved in WCW, in developmental, in the power plant, didn't he?
Well, actually, no. He didn't believe in that. He didn't believe in me as a wrestler. When we were in Florida, I went down there one day a week to do the color and do my managing, and then another day I would go down there and I would do the get in the ring and just see what it felt like, so that I could actually, you know, feel a little bit what those guys feel. Of course, I had no idea what I was doing. And, you know, but I felt like, God, like when I tried it when I was 22, I was like, I knew I belonged there. I knew I belonged doing that. It was my destiny. I knew it. And I said, Dusty, what do you think about me, you know, taking a couple of the guys that I've got and starting a stable? And I actually wrestle like Michael P.S. Hayes does, where he manages and wrestles. No, Daddy. No, D, you are fire-breathing dragon manager. You're going to be the greatest manager of all time. It doesn't always build you up. And basically what he was really saying to me, no, kid, you're too old. Not even you're too old. It's so hard, like, to be a wrestler. Like, a lot of people, you can see they've got great moves. So they've got this great ooh-ha moves that pop the crowd, but they really don't know how to get over and be a top person in the game, because they don't understand the psychology, or they don't understand how to get over. And you've seen some great talent that, you know, God, how come that guy never made it? He had a great look. He could wrestle, but he had no real charisma. You know, so he just didn't think I had the ability to put it all together. You know, especially I wasn't a kid. I wasn't in my 20s like he was when he started. And he just discouraged me. Even when I came to WCW as a manager and color commentator, the reason why they let me go from... The reason why I became a wrestler, and it's the truth, it's because they wouldn't let me manage anymore. You know, Magnum T.A. told me, who was a legend in Charlotte, and would have been Sting if he hadn't had an automobile accident with his Ferrari that paralyzed the left side of his body. He would have been the man. But Dusty loved him and took care of him and gave him a job, and he was Dusty's right-hand man. And he told me that, we can't let you manage anymore, because between the hair and the clothes and the bling and the wrap and the dolls, you're like taking all the attention away from the boys, and they draw all the money. And I'm like, Magnum, am I too over the top of professional wrestling? He just laughed, and he's like, D, it's not your fault. You know, it's just what we should have done was give you a pair of tights and boots and see if you can do this. And he half-assed laughed about it and walked away. And I thought, you know what, man? That's what I was born to do. And I knew it was a huge part of who I was. And I said, screw it, man. I'm going to freaking do that. Like, I never got into this to be a manager. Maybe at the end of my career. I mean, I never got into be a color commentator. You know, I got into it to be a wrestler. So when I started my career, my only goal was to make it to the mid-card, and was to build enough credibility that I could say I was in the ring with Ric Flair. I was in the ring with Luger, Sting, the Four Horsemen, whatever. You know, that I was in the ring with those guys. And as a heel manager, I could talk about how I would beat Flair from one corner of the ring to the other. And in my scenario there, Flair would have just destroyed me. You know, but as being a heel manager, I could say whatever I wanted. You know, I could say, oh, I beat Sting all over the building. And maybe I lasted 2 minutes with him. You know, but as a heel color commentator, I could say stuff like that. But in the big picture, as I started doing it, I started realizing, wait a minute. This is not my destiny to go back to being a color commentator. My destiny is to be a top guy in this business. And nobody believed it, you know, like everybody laughed at me.
And how did you get then that you were obviously working with WCW and for the early part of your career, you were associated with the AWA and the WCW. How then did you get involved in driving a pink Cadillac for Rhythm and Blues at WrestleMania 6?
Yeah, well, that goes back when I was in the AWA. And like I told you, these guys, these top WWF performers would come to my club and I took care of their drinks. You know, I paid for their drinks and treated them like kings. And I developed real relationships with them. I wasn't just some mark who was buying them drinks. You know, certain guys I became very good friends with, which Luke the Bushwhacker, another Hall of Famer, you know, who's 70 years old today, still in the ring doing his thing. You know, he's Butch didn't take a lot of bumps, you know, later on in his career, but in the beginning he took a hell of a lot of bumps. But Luke was... Luke was a great guy. We still talk to this day often. He's, he was the guy. He said, Diamond, you know, Rhythm and Blues, they're looking for a really hot car, an old-time car, to take them to the ring, WrestleMania 6. I'm going to call Pat Patterson. I'm going to call Pat, and I'm going to see if I can get you the gig, kid. And he called him up and put me on the phone with Pat. And I said, they'd seen pictures of it, and Pat was like, what's it going to cost us for the car? I said, if you ship it up there, because you can't drive it, you know, it's 1962 pink Cadillac. You know, I said, if you ship it up there and you fly me up and let me drive it, I'll give it to you for nothing. You know, so it was a win-win situation. Basically, they paid $1,000 for the car because flying me up there and putting me up. So I'm a part of WrestleMania 6. It's like, you know, that's why when I was, you know, up there on the podium when I'm coming in, I mean, it's the first thing that I wanted to, you know, to note, you know, to think that Diamond Dallas Page was here at WrestleMania 6 driving the pink Cadillac, driving Jimmy Hart, Honky Tonk Man, and Greg the Hammer Valentine, Rhythm and Blues, to the ring. You know, the trivia part is I didn't get the gig. The car did. It wasn't like they wanted to book me. They wanted the car. I was just doing a ride-along. And I actually said that short clip when I tried out, not tried out, but when we were doing the rehearsal the night before. We did a rehearsal. They always do that. Vince is there, and everybody walk up to the podium, shake hands with Vince, friggin' walk up to the podium. He says, don't lean down. The microphone will find you. You know, wants to make sure you know what you're doing when you get out there. And he says, Diamond, just, you know, give a little bit of your speech. And I said that part about trivia bit. The car didn't get the gig. I mean, I didn't get the gig. The car did. I was just doing a ride-along, and he went, ha, ha, excellent. And I thought to myself, Vince, if you like that, you're going to love everything else I got to say.
So how did you develop the character then that you became known for in WCW? Because you're talking about as a manager, this over-the-top sort of character, and your character in WCW was quite removed from that.
You know, I tried a lot of different things. There was a part where Eric Bischoff did an amazing job introducing me. And I had a little bit of reservation because over the last couple of years, me and him weren't as close. And we had a little bit of, you know, I let it all go because I loved the guy. And we were best friends for a long time there. But you know, I wasn't really sure he would put the work in, you know, if he really, because he, like I would do for him. You know, I wasn't sure. And man, he delivered the best introduction. I think my introduction of Jake Snake Roberts was as good as it gets. And Eric Bischoff delivered my introduction was right up with that same level, as good as it gets. And I was really grateful to him for putting all that work in there and really making it mean something. But one of the things he said was, you know, I tried every gimmick in the world. You know, and I'm wearing the crazy clothes, the crazy hair, you know, with the rhinestone bling and the smoking cigars and chewing bubble gum and, you know, and doing number flash. I mean, you name it, I did it. And sometimes I would just keep adding to it. And Bischoff's the one who made me strip away all the gimmicks. And he made me lose them all because he wanted me to just be me. And he really thought, you know, he knew who Dallas Page, he knew who Page Joseph Falkenberg, like before I ever was in professional wrestling, like who I was. And he knew that. And he wanted me to be that guy. And I remember I got all the way down to the last cigar. And I was still using a cigar. And he saw me as I was getting ready to walk out the behind of the curtain, and he looked at me and goes, "Dave, where's the cigar?" And I'm like, "Dude, come on. I smoke cigars." He's like, "Trust me. Lose the cigar." And I didn't want to do it, but I threw it out, and I walked out, and it was the biggest pop I ever got. It's not because I threw the cigar away. It was just the timing. But he was right. I had to lose them all. And once I did that, you know, my life, I mean, my career was really starting to take off then.
And 1997 was really the defining year for you, wasn't it? Two events that propelled you to superstardom. Randy Savage and Spring Stampede. Tell us what happened there.
Well, you got to back it up a little bit farther than that, because it was the whole me saying no to the NWO. And you got to remember, back then, I was a heel. I mean, it was really funny because both Steve Austin and I, at the same time, were trying so hard to stay being a heel, and the people flipped us, you know, and that's when it works. You don't just decide, I think I'll be a babyface. No. The people have to do it. And when I came up with the whole idea of, you know, Kevin and Scott coming up to me and asking me to join the NWO like they would do to certain guys. And everybody always goes, "Hell yeah, I'm in." But I said no. And we drag it out for 2 or 3 weeks. And then eventually I put the shirt on and hug Kevin and like shake Scott's hand. And when he goes to pull away, pull him back, bang. You know, backdrop Kevin over the top rope. Now, what happened was the booking committee at the time, they still didn't believe in me. And nobody, as you remember, nobody touched those guys. Do you ever remember them ever being laid out, like ever?
No, I mean, no one. I mean, even until, I mean, not until Sting probably was anyone.
Well,
put
not
up any resistance.
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah, not until I left them to weigh-in as I took off through the crowd. Yeah, like, not until that moment. Then Sting would become, you know, out of the sky and all the things he did. But I'll tell you, Sting going away for that year and hot, you know, just being up in the rafters occasionally, again, the best thing that ever happened to me, because he allowed, you know, Not like his choice, it just was what it was. You know, him not being out there and being the significant force, and Goldberg was, there was no Goldberg then. You know, that didn't happen until the end of 97. In the beginning of 97, it was DDP. And I was all over those guys. Getting, you know, the thing was, it was supposed to be a 3-week angle. But because booking committee didn't believe in me, it turned into a 10-week angle because they kept trying to take it off the TV. And every week I'd fight back to try to get it on the TV. And I couldn't do it. It took Scott and Kev to actually say, "No, we need somebody to fight, and he's ready." Like, Scott used to say it all the time. "You're not a heel. You're a babyface." You're like, in real life, you're a babyface. You know, here, you're a babyface. The people want to cheer you. And he was right. You know, I wanted to be a heel because it's more fun. But I never realized how much fun it can be when you're really over and the people grab a hold of you.
I mean,
that's a lot of fun.
Because you've been involved with Scott before, hadn't you? Scott, I think you were with Scott managing him when you first tried sort of the Razor gimmick, weren't you?
Well, you know, with Scott, I created that whole look. Like, Razor Ramon wasn't created in the WWF. Razor Ramon was created in WCW, where I did everything from changing the color of his hair, shaving off his walrus mustache, doing the brush cut look of the 5 o'clock shadow. Really, Scott's is more like a 2 o'clock shadow. I mean, that's how hairy his face is. But I created all of that. And WWF at the time wouldn't even return his phone call. He called there every single week for a year. Never got Pat Patterson on the phone. The day he debuted as a Diamond Stud, he called him. And basically, Pat Patterson wanted to let him know, when you're ready to come, you got a spot. And that took about a year later, in between Scott working as a stud for about 3 or 4 months, maybe 5 months, and then he had his elbow fixed and was out, and by the end of the year, boom, he was in WWF, and we know what happened there with, you know, Hall of Fame Razor Ramon. And then when they came back, you understand, I got Scott the job. I didn't just, you know, create the gimmick. They didn't want him because he'd already been up there in WCW twice, and he didn't get over. And I blame a lot of that on timing, because Scott Hall was destined, as long as he didn't quit, he was destined to be one of the greatest in our business ever. But it's about timing, and it's about the booking committee believing that you deserve that spot. And they never really gave Scott that opportunity. So they can say he didn't get over, but they didn't give him the opportunity either. So when he left, obviously, we know what happened then, but it's when he came back. Now, when I also got him the job, his wife was pregnant with Cody. He needed that job so bad, or he was about to go be in the real world.
And
so me getting him that job at that moment, there is no Razor Ramon without that.
Now,
and
you,
from A to Z.
Well, you mentioned injuries a couple of times there. You've done the full array of injuries by the looks of it.
Well, you know, I've had two shoulder surgeries. I've had two knee surgeries. And, like, that's really the beauty. You know, we'll get into it in a bit, but that's really what puts DDP yoga on the map, because I know how I rehabilitated the shoulder injuries, the knee injuries, the back, you know, the rupturing of the L4 and L5. Like, when your back's blown out, it's the center of the universe to you. You really realize, like, you can have other injuries, but if your back is blown out, you can't do anything. Like, if you hurt your knee, you can grab a crutch and you can still get around. But if your back's blown out, you're kind of screwed. So, you know, when it comes to healing the back, you know, and all that, going to all of the therapy sessions that I went to, you know, like what DDP yoga is yoga positions, rehabilitation techniques, and mixed with old school calisthenics and dynamic resistance. So all of that together makes up what DDP yoga is. All the injuries have given me the knowledge of how to heal myself and others and help each other, people heal themselves.
And you only came into yoga because it was something your wife suggested when you decided you didn't want a surgery, wasn't an option that you wanted to take, and you certainly didn't want to retire.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, for me, I'm the guy who wouldn't be caught dead doing yoga. You know, I'm that guy. Like, I ain't doing yoga. But when you sign a multi-million-dollar deal, a multi-million-dollar three-year deal, when you're at the top of the world, no player wants to walk away when you're on the top, you know, you're on the top of the food chain. You know, from great football players to great soccer players, the basketball, like, you name it. Nobody wants to walk away from the show. And I just got there. It wasn't like I'd been there for 10 years. I mean, I just got to that apex. And I would do anything. So, yeah, I'll try yoga now. And I was like, wow, this is really helping. But again, it wasn't enough for me. Like, regular yoga wasn't going to heal me the way DDP yoga healed me, because of the throwing in of the rehabilitation techniques, you know, and then the old school calisthenics done with a slow burn movement. And what I mean by that, like instead of a push-up up and down, it might be a three-second push-up. We had lowered for three, hold 3 inches off the ground for three, and come up for three. You know, it might be a five-second. It might be a 10-second push-up. Well, in the beginning, I couldn't do it. I could barely do a three-second push-up on my knees. Because that's another thing about DDP yoga. There's always a modification. That's the reason why I could help that disabled veteran that was so beat up, he had to walk around with knee braces, back brace, and canes for 15 years. That's why. Because of how I constantly create one workout after the next that anyone can do at any level. And, you know, that's the whole thing for me because I was so beat up. And the reason why people lose so much weight doing the program, because I'm actually having you flex and engage muscles as you're doing it. And every time you flex or engage a muscle, your heart has to beat faster to get the blood to the muscle. And we're going to come to this at the end, but I want everybody to know I'm actually going to be in the UK and in Scotland. I'm going to be there September 1st to September 19th. And I'm going to be I'm starting out at the Comic-Con. I'm doing a Comic-Con. Let me see if my wife sent me the, she sent it to me here. It is, it's called the Fanatic Expo, and it's in Harrogate, which is H-A-R-R-O-G-A-T-E. So if you can't understand my accent, Harrogate Convention Center, and that's on the 2nd and the 3rd of September, and we're either going to do a workshop, a DDP yoga workshop, on the Friday before or the Sunday after the workshop is over. And I should say after the Comic-Con signing is over. I prefer to do it on Sunday afternoon. But if you go to DDPYogaWorkshops.com, where you can sign up there, and I'll just send you an email when I have all of the dates up, because I'm not just going to be in Harrogate. Then I'm going up to Glasgow, Scotland. I'm going to be doing some what I call an inspirational conversation with DDP. You know, anytime I'm talking about anything, it's all to inspire people to believe in themselves and, you know, get themselves so motivated and inspired that they feel like they can run through a brick wall. Like, that's my goal. And, of course, answer all the questions that people have for me. So we're going to be doing inspirational conversation with DDP. We're going to be doing Comic-Con signings. And we're going to be doing workshops. And right now, I know we're slated to do workshops in Birmingham, London, Glasgow, Harrogate. And there'll be some other dates. So if you're listening and you're in and around any of the areas or feel like taking a drive, you can either go to DDP Yoga Workshops and leave your name, or even better yet, go to DiamondDallasPage.com, sign up on my mailing list, and you will be, you know, you'll be there. You know, I'll be able to send you all the information, you know, where I'm going to be doing what.
Now, you've turned DDP yoga, and it's been a massive thing, not just for professional wrestlers. I know there's a lot of professional wrestlers who are raving about it. Chris Jericho, AJ Styles, Edge, Dustin Rhodes, who better knows Goldust. Man on the street as well. Tell us about the app.
The app is crazy. Oh, my God. Excuse me. You know, it's been out there for about a year, but you still haven't heard me promoting it, but you're about to, because it's finally at the spot where if we get a bug, we can fix it pretty much pretty quickly. You know, because we're talking about something that is, you know, an app, you know, so it's electronic, so there's going to be little bugs here and there. But again, like I said, we always, you know, take care of it pretty quickly. But the app, it just, like, if you get my DVDs, you get 15 workouts, you get the poster, you get the program guide, and it's full of knowledge. So with the DVDs, you get, you know, the DVDs, the inspirational stuff that I write about, and then you get the program guide that you can read. Now, with the app, first of all, you get it instantly. Like, you sign up for it, you get it. There's no waiting. Doesn't have to go through customs. There's over 150 workouts on the app. So 10 times. And that's because I can't keep burning off DVDs. Eventually, DVDs are going to be dead. They're still alive now because people haven't figured out how easy it is to take your phone or your iPad or your computer and have it go right to your TV and be on your 40-inch, 60-inch, 80-inch, 90-inch TV. Can do it so easily. So, like, one of the videos I'm doing next week, it'll be up probably the week after that, is how easy it is to take your phone and have it, boom, come right up on your TV. So now it isn't looking at your phone. You're looking at your 60-inch TV, 65-inch TV. So you'll not only get all the workouts, and I'm talking about workouts that start, if you need to, sitting in a chair and working out. Like, I don't even know workouts out there that's ever done that. We've got chair workouts. Then I graduate you to using the chair for balance and how to use the chair to get you up and get you down, help you with movement. And that's what it's all about, creating movement, especially when you're in that position, when you're in that, you know, disability spot, really. But it's all about getting you so you don't need the chair eventually. And then I've got beginner, intermediate, advanced, you know, my extreme psycho workouts that I do with my top athletes. And then, of course, there's all the nutritional part. And it's not just a recipe. We give you a recipe and directions how to make it and a video of me doing it with my wife or my daughters or maybe my favorite chef or maybe somebody from the DDP yoga community that has lost 60, 100, whatever amount of pounds, and they did it with these amazing recipes. And all the food is real. None of it is, you know, genetically modified food. It's real, healthy food that tastes amazing. Because I don't care how good something is for you. If it don't taste great, I'm not eating it. You know, it's as simple as that. Then, of course, there's all the inspirational stuff on DDP TV, which is all within the same app. And DDP Nutrition and DDP Yoga Workouts, right? They're all there right on the app. Like, every Monday, you're going to get, if you're a part of the app, DDP Yoga Now, which you can download on iTunes or Google Play, you know, but ideally you should go to ddpyoga.com because it's cheaper. And it's cheaper because iTunes and Google Play, they add 30%. Now, it's not a whole 30% more than us, but they take 30% of everything that gets sold to them. So, you know, it's a huge business for iTunes and Google Play. And so it's going to cost a little bit more over there. So you better go to deepyoga.com. And then the other part that really helps with your inspiration, your motivation, your stimulation is our tracking section. And we track your weight month to month. We track your measurements. Everything's month to month. We track your pain, you know, like your shoulders, your knees, your back, your hips. And a lot of people, like, this workout was never developed for weight loss. But a lot of people use it because it's a really awesome side effect. Now, I have you take these six pictures. And with these pictures, every month you can see your flexibility, your physiology, and your core strength change. That keeps you motivated. So pictures, weight, measurements, pain, and then, of course, I stop, like, so you can track this yourself, your blood pressure, your A1C, your blood sugar. All of these things help you stay focused on the goal, on the dream of either getting in amazing shape or just trying to get yourself not feeling so lousy. Like, I literally just had Rick Steiner call me up yesterday. I mean, when I talk about real badasses in our profession, professional wrestling, the top of the list is the Steiner brothers. Like, tough as it gets. Shoot real AAU champions. Rick just happened to be the strongest guy I've ever known. When he would grab you, like he could grab you, he had such strength, he could put you to your knees. I mean, he's the gremlin, dog-faced gremlin, man. When I tell you the toughest guy alive, he was one of them. And he called me up yesterday. He called me back and he'd talk to you. And I had talked to Rick in probably 8 years, about 6 years. But he's got my number if he ever needs to get a hold of me. And he's seen the resurrection of Jake the Snake. You know, he's seen what I did for the disabled veteran Arthur Borman. He sees all these people talking about DDP yoga taking away their pain. And he's beat up right now, just like every one of the boys. And, you know, he's like, hey, man, I'd love to get with you. And we were supposed to get together today, but we're going to do it next week sometime. And, you know, anytime I can help any of the guys get out of pain, I encourage them. You know, all the wrestlers, and if you've made it to the show from ROH to TNA to WWE, I give them the program 100%. Like, here, just take it. You got it for life. Because it's my way of giving back to my guys. And, you know, a lot of them do it. You know, but a lot of them still don't. And all you have to do is look at Chris Jericho, who's who just took another sabbatical, but he left bouncing around like a 23-year-old kid. He's 46. And at 40, the doctors told him, like me, his career was over. He had herniated his L4, and it's done. It was very similar to mine, except for mine was worse. So I knew if he just did the program, he was going to be okay. And in 5 weeks, he was 85% pain-free. In 3 months, he was 100% pain-free, and he headlined WrestleMania with Punk. And ever since then, and Chris Jericho isn't doing a commercial for me, even though he is on his podcast, because he told everybody for years before I ever paid for a spot on sponsoring his show. All he's talking about is the real world, like what he's doing right now and how it's DDPY workouts are affecting him. And, like, that's all I'd have to see. Killing it. He's been wrestling. This year will be 30 years since he was 17. Tell me the other guys who were wrestling over 20 years who could even move around, never mind get in the ring and do what he can do.
Now,
so again, that says it all.
Wrestling, finally, the last question for me. Wrestling can be a dog-eat-dog world, and there's a lot of egos out there, and you talked about the backstage heat before. You've helped so many, and you seem to be friends with so many of the guys. I mean, you mentioned it quickly, but the resurrection of Jake the Snake, it's a brilliant film. It's a difficult watch at times, but you're helping Jake and Scott Hall when they hit rock bottom. Why do you think that you're still friends with all these guys, and why are you out there helping all these guys?
Well, you know, I just finished. It's not finished yet. We're 95% finished. It's another documentary, and it's called either Relentless or Resilient. I haven't decided yet. I'm pretty sure it's Relentless. And it's really my story of coming into wrestling, but just a tad of that, because it's all about, it's an entrepreneur. Like, so many people are entrepreneurs today, and those people are really going to want to see this movie, because it just doesn't talk about the success of DDP Yoga. It talks about the trials and tribulations. It talks about being an 8 to 12 year overnight success, you know, and how hard it was, you know, how hard it was for me to become a wrestler when everybody's laughing at me. Well, imagine how much they laughed at me when I told them I not only was doing yoga, but created a different yoga for people who wouldn't be caught dead doing yoga. Like, I've never gone after the yoga community, ever. I've always said, they're over there, and they have this amazing yoga. I've got this DDPY workout over here that's way different, but gets the same results. And Scott Hall says it all the time. He said that my addiction is helping people. And I never really thought about it like that till he said it. But I thought, he's right. Because I've been doing this my whole life. Like the guys who have known me my whole life, the guys who have known me, I was just out with Ice Train. He went, his name is Harold Hogue, but he was Ice Train for a couple of years in WCW. And I was with his son, and me and him were having dinner last night, and we started talking about DDP yoga, and he looks at his son, Miles, and he says, it's no different than Dallas when he started getting all these guys jobs. Helped all these guys. He taught a lot of them how to wrestle. You know, I when I help people, it makes me feel great about me. Now, again, I always tell people who are goal-oriented, find something that you love to do and figure out a way to get paid to do it. And that's what I did with DDP Yoga. But I also invested $548,000. And it looked like it wasn't going anywhere. And then that Arthur video, finally, you know, Steve Yu, my director of Resurrection Jake the Snake and the president of my company, he's a great storyteller. And he redid that. He redid that that video, and it went viral. I didn't even know what viral meant at the time. You know, so we tell that whole story in Relentless. But the question you ask is, like, why do I do it? It's because I feel great about me. You know, it's like, I've also found, it took me a long time, but I've also found something I can do. And I don't, you know, if you really look at from my app to my DVDs, it doesn't cost that much. And what you really don't know is if you put the work in, like, if wrestling fans knew how close they could get to me by taking care of themselves and using my program to do it, they would be astonished. They'd be blown away. Like, I do a retreat every year. This year it's in Mexico again. And we're sold out. And there's some people who've been coming every year. And there's other people who have just come for the first time. Maybe they, you know, maybe they lost some weight. Maybe they got rid of some pain. Either way, they want to go on a retreat. When they realize that it's not just going to be about working out with me and having a couple of parties that we go to or going to the pool and having a few drinks, when they realize that I actually really give a shit, you know, and they all know, you know, but they realize, like, wow, now he knows my name, you know, and, you know, some of them I've become really, really tight with. But again, it's the people who put the work in. If you don't put the work in, I don't have the time. I just did an autograph signing at a Comic-Con in Worcester, Massachusetts. These are some really big people who have really lost hope, lost their way. I gave six of them my direct email. They had the program or they just got the program. And I told them, send me an email that says Dallas, send me the list. Now, the list is the education part. The list is all up on the app. It's all up there. And it says, go listen to my Live Life at 90% lecture that I did for actors. Listen to my Own Your Life audiobook. You know, you get it for free as part of the program. You know, now go watch Food Inc., Genetic Roulette, GMO, OMG, and The Resurrection of Jake the Snake. Resurrection is going to show you what's possible. The other movies are going to tell you what the food is. That said, I educate you. So with my workouts, you don't have to change a thing you're eating. If you're only 15, 20, 30 pounds, 40 pounds overweight, maybe just cut back on the fast food bulls. But if you're someone who's beat up and broken down and obese, you need to do the whole picture. Now, if you don't, you'll still feel better and you'll still drop some weight. But Arthur Borman, the disabled veteran, he not only lost 140 pounds in 10 months, which I guess would be about 89 kilos in 10 months. He also lost his knee braces, back brace, and wraparound canes, and not just walked, but ran, right? That is going to take dedication. So I teach it all. When I'm doing my workshops, DDP Yoga workshops, it is inspiration meets perspiration. I bill them as 2.5 to 3 hours. Sometimes they go 4 because I'm all about inspiring people to believe in themselves. And once I got you there, when you see what you do during that day, 95% of them will be like, I can't believe I did that. Well, that's the beginning. Now you build on that. And that's when we come to do our tour. My wife and myself, Brenda, she's amazing. Everybody loves her. You want to follow me? Go to @RealDDP, @DDPYoga. Facebook, you want to see what we're all about? Go to DDP Yoga Facebook, not mine, with 500,000 people. Go to the members only, that's only got like 19 or 20,000 people. Like that page. Read what people say. Don't listen to a word that I have to say. Read what people say about the program. Trust me when I tell you, you want to come see me when I hit the UK, because I will help you not just change your life, but own your life. Go to DiamondDallasPage.com or DDPYoga.com. Sign up on my mailing list. You'll know exactly what the tour is. We're going to tighten it up this week. By next week, we'll be getting it out there.